Okay, Genesis chapter 6 is where you want to go. When we closed up last week, you remember we were in verses 14 and 15. We were talking about the actual building of the ark. We were talking about the dimensions and everything. And I told you I was going to come back and talk about kind of its shape and things at the very beginning this week. So I threw the little cartoon version up on the screen. You know, the little cutesy preschool sort of version of this that everybody, you know, aw, that sort of thing. We had a little toy one. Actually, we still have it. We had it out for Avery when she came up a few weeks back. It's kind of shaped like that, and it's got the little plastic animals and stuff that are all very cute. But I would have to agree a little bit with Ken Ham on this. Remember, Ken Ham is the preacher, apologist, teacher that deals with creationism. He's part of the whole Answers in Genesis thing. He says, this can be problematic to present this cutesy arc, because in some ways it could lead to believing it's more like a fairy tale, that this is all just kind of a cutesy story made up for kids, and it's not grounded in reality at all. I got no problem with this cutesy. I'm fine with that. But we do need to follow up with those that are growing older and can start assimilating, you know, the facts and the figures. We need to help them understand the Bible is historical. It's got facts and figures in it. And that the flood really did happen, and there's evidence on planet Earth, you know, huge sedimentary layers all over the world, sea fossils on the tops of mountains. It's not that the mountains were originally there and the water got up that high. It was those mountains used to not be there, and the sediment from the flood got laid down, and then the mountains pushed up after the flood. And so we've got evidence in the world that this is all real. And so we need to help people get their minds wrapped around it. Because why did the flood happen? Sin. The flood was judgment on a world that had fully turned its back on God, except for a little bitty tiny bit of it. And God had already decided he was going to do one redo. One redo. And then the next time around, the world's going to be destroyed by fire, and that will be the start of the eternal kingdom of Jesus. So this is a lesson for us to learn when we are interacting with a world that is in a mess, to realize that we're heading toward judgment again. That's the reality. And we want people to get on the ark, which is Jesus. He is the ark. And we don't want them to drown in their sin, just like we didn't want to drown in our sin. And so that's the motivation of teaching this as reality, is that God doesn't want anyone to lose out on a relationship with him. And he gives opportunities of salvation every time judgment is on its way. The ark didn't look like this. Now, let's talk a little bit about ships, modern-day ships, if I can get it going here. Oh, my goodness, I can't believe it. Would you go up there and tap on the, take the cursor and tap on there? I thought I already did that once. What we're going to do is we're going to look at the largest wooden ship that has been built, and it's not as big as the ark. Now I'm talking about modern era, obviously, because the ark is pre-flood, ancient era. So we're going to look at that, and then we're also going to look at the first time metal ships got as big as the ark. Now, anybody want to take a guess as to when those things happened? When those boats got built?
Metal ships?
Yeah. After the Civil War. So, here you go. Thank you, dear. Here's the Wyoming. This is a wooden schooner. It was launched in 1909. It's the largest wooden ship other than the ark, that's been built. It's 450 feet long, technically, but that includes that great big spar out the front and a little bit back toward the back. You know, that's cheating a little bit. That's kind of like the tallest building in the world, but they've got this huge TV or radio antenna on the top of it. I don't think that should count. So the deck itself, where you can walk, is 350 feet long. That's not close to the ark still. It's 50 feet wide, and it's 33 feet deep for its cargo depth, so for the deck down to the keel. So that's pretty big. The metal ship was the RMS Umbria. It was the ocean liner that was launched in 1884, so just a few years after the Civil War. It's 502 feet long, still not as long as the Ark, by just a few feet. 57 feet wide, still not as wide as the Ark. And 38 feet, you know, of usable depth from the cabins down to the base. Still not as tall as the Ark, but it's pretty close. That's a big steamship. And that was in the 1880s, and then they started making them bigger and bigger progressively through the years, till finally they got over the size of the Ark by the time you got to the Queen Mary, I think, and then the Queen Elizabeth, definitely much bigger. So that's modern time, where we finally got to ships as big as the Ark. And so here we go back to Genesis 6, starting verse 33. God said to Noah, "The ark is all flesh, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. Behold, I'm about to destroy them with the earth." So that's the judgment theme that we were talking about just a moment ago. "Make for yourself an ark of gopher wood." Remember, gopher is just a Hebrew word. We don't know exactly what it means. But I told you that the Hebrew-speaking, Greek-speaking Jews of the 3rd century BC, they just translated it as squared lumber. So lumber that has been cut up and squared off. And you shall make the ark with rooms, or nests, little places that animals are going to be able to be, and shall cover it inside and out with pitch, so waterproofing. And this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark is 300 cubits. And I like to use the Egyptian royal cubit, which is 20.7 inches. So that's 517 and a half feet. 50 cubits, so that's 86 and a quarter feet wide. And then the height, 30 cubits, which is 51.75 feet high. So much wider and taller than the cabin areas available on this ship right here. It's equivalent, if I'm not mistaken, to 66 of those shipping containers that you see in cubic availability. So that's a lot of space. Imagine 66 rail cars coming past you. That's how much cubic space is going to be inside this ark. So you should picture it, I think, as a box, because the word ark means a box. But as we talked last week, one of the big things that they've got nowadays, the Ark Encounter down at Williamston, Kentucky. And I forgot. Who said they'd been there? You guys went there? You've been there? You guys been there? Okay. I haven't been there yet. One of these days, I want to get down there, walk around in it. You can see on here that they have fleshed out the boxy shape. They've got the dimensions. In fact, they decided to use what they refer to as the long Jewish cubit, which is just slightly shorter than the long Egyptian cubit. So their ark is about 510 feet or something like that long, instead of the 517 I used. So it's very close to the same dimensions on the inside. But they feel, this was their choice, they feel that many of the of these shipbuilding techniques that show up in the ancient world, they felt that they probably got their start in the building of this monster boat. And so they put, you know, the front curve on the bow, they put the little wind sail on the tail end up high so that it would, you know, rotate with the wind. I'm not so sure that would be necessary, because a boat this long, with if it had flat sides on it, it would always turn into the wind. Because as soon as the wind started blowing on one side, it would turn away from that so that its shortest side was facing into the wind. And it wouldn't matter whether front or back, because this ship was never intended to be sailed. There's no reason to guide it. There would be no reason for a rudder. Because who is in control of this ship? God. He's the one that's going to make sure it ends up where it belongs. The dimensions are interesting, and I'm sure that you probably came across something at the Ark Encounter that dealt with this. The dimensions are perfect for withstanding huge wave action at sea. They took the dimensions and they actually made the box shape and put it into a wave tank that they used to test ship designs. And they were putting waves, you know, over 100 feet high against it, and it didn't even come close to capsizing. And it always started turning into the wind, or into the wave itself, just because of the design. So this perfect shape given by God, these dimensions, this proportionality, is perfect for stability, which is exactly what's needed here, because it's going to be a nasty time when the flood is starting. The first 40 days, very tumultuous, like being caught in a gigantic washing machine, I suppose. So that's the Ark exhibit that they have down there, and I'm okay with that. I just prefer, though, to take in consideration some of the historical information that we've gotten. First of all, I shared with you, the word in the Hebrew is box. The Hebrew has a separate word for boat. It doesn't get used here. It's box. And what makes a box? Its sides, its squared corners. That's what makes a box. So that's also going to be added to supposed sightings of the Ark, which this guy right here, the little short older gentleman, that's George Hagopian. He is an Armenian, or was, I should say, an Armenian, who eventually came to the United States. And when he was about 10 years of age, he claims to have seen the Ark and touched it. Of course, Armenia is right there where Ararat is located. The Mount Ararat area is between Turkey, Armenia, and I'm thinking it's Azerbaijan, but I can't remember for sure now. It used to be the Soviet Union. So he is from the exact area, and his father and grandfather, I believe both, were ministers in the Armenian Orthodox Church. And the Armenian Orthodox believe that they are the keepers of the Ark story, and even of the location of the Ark. And when George was this 10-year-old boy, it was a particularly hot summer. And those are the ones in which people are taken up onto the mountain to see a portion of the Ark, because that's about the only time it'll ever come out from underneath the snow and the ice. The man you see with him in this picture is Alfred Lee. And the reason I showed you the picture of him, and this is happening in 1970, is because Mr. Lee has an interest of searching out all sorts of Ark stories And particularly, he wants to make drawings of them, paintings of the descriptions. So this is his 1976 painting. Actually, I think it might be a drawing. It was based on Hagopian's testimony. Now, Hagopian already died by this time. By 1972, he was dead. But in that last 2 years of his life, 71 and 72, he did this recorded testimony about his experience. And so what happened was Lee, who had talked to him in person, then went back to those recordings and, using that testimony, did this drawing, which George had claimed that he'd seen in the early 1900s. Now, this is a 1985 drawing that Lee did when he went back over them again, you know, about 10 years later. He started to listen to it in more detail, which gave him what he felt like was more detail to add to his drawing. And you can see a little bit more information in this, including the little raised center area. And the little steps. You see the little steps on the end there? George said that those had been added by those coming to the Ark. And at one time, they were laying on the snow, on the ice. That's why they're so far up off the ground. Because when George saw it, it was a hot summer, and a lot of the ice had retreated. This is a colored painting that Mr. Lee did based on that same testimony. You get a better picture here in a zoomed-in portion where George said that his, I think it might have been his uncle maybe, might have been his father or grandfather, but one of his relatives, male relatives, kind of held him up so he could get on those wooden steps to climb up and to be able to get up on the Ark. And that this was a huge experience for him. He did go back on his own on another occasion later, and again repeated the same sort of things that he saw. Now, what's the shape that you see there? If you were going to describe it as a ship or a box, which is it? It's a box. There's no doubt about that. And so that's another one of my reasons for thinking that the box shape is probably the accurate shape, because we do have eyewitness testimony of those that said they've been up there. Now, not just him. This is a painting, not by Mr. Lee, someone else, based on I don't know if I can pronounce his name correctly, Armius Artunov. His description of when he participated in a Russian expedition to Mount Ararat in 1916. The summer of 1916, when it had been a hot summer again, and there had been reports from people flying around, you know, in their little biplanes and things, that they'd seen something unusual sticking out of the ice and the snow up on the mountain. So the Russians sent an expedition up here. Mr. A, who, by the way, became the inventor of like a sump pump sort of thing. He actually, if you look his name up, he is an American, a Russian-American that was involved in inventing underwater pumping. Who would have thought it? Right? He went on and did some big things. So anyway, he was there in 1916, and when he described it to someone, this is what they drew. This is what they painted. How would you describe it? Ship or a box? It's a box. Yeah, definitely a box. Now, this one is a follow-up to Mr. Lee's next interview of someone that had claimed to have been up on Mount Ararat. This guy, his name is Ed Davis. He was stationed with the American, I don't know if it was the embassy or something else, But he was in that region of the world for American business of some sort in 1943. So World War II, right? And he had a little time off and had heard from some contacts, because he was very friendly with the locals, the Armenians, that it was another hot summer. And guess what was showing? The Ark. And so he got permission to have some time off, and he went on his own little expedition with his friend and got up there. But he did not see the Ark intact. What he described, and you can see it if you look real carefully, toward the bottom and a little bit off to the left. What he saw was, he said he saw the Ark broken into a couple of different pieces in what appeared to be some sort of slide area, that it was canted, and that the part that he saw open had three decks in it, and that he could actually see individual cages and things, or what looked like cages with doors on them, up inside there.
Why didn't he take a photo?
Supposedly photos were taken, but were confiscated. This is disputed territory between Russia and Armenia and all of that, okay? So all he had was his description to give to Mr. Lee. So Mr. Lee did this drawing, but he combined it with what he'd already gathered from Mr. Hagopian, and he theorized, and that's all it is, that the Ark that had once been resting above a glacier area at some point slid down and broke up, and the different pieces then were going to be covered with snow and ice again whenever the hot summer abated once more. And so that's the information we have. We've had other people try to get up there, but it is a dangerous mountain to climb if you don't know people that know it. In fact, I think it was this guy, or it might have been another guy, when he was being taken there by people that knew, he saw some dead person's legs sticking up out of the snow, and his guide said, "That's what happens when you don't know the mountain. He shouldn't have been here." So it is a dangerous place, but also it's disputed territory. It's also mostly ice and snow covered all the time, except